This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Quarantined passengers infected. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. On this Tuesday, February 18th, glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
There are 14 Americans being treated for coronavirus upon their return to the U.S. from an overseas cruise ship. They were initially not supposed to be allowed on the charter flights.
The Boy Scouts of America has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in the wake of lawsuits alleging sexual abuse.
Denny Hamlin won his third Daytona 500, but excitement was tempered by a fiery wreck for Ryan Newman in the final moments.
And why some Democrats worry that Bernie Sanders could be unstoppable en route to the Democratic presidential nomination.
Bernie Sanders is by far the most progressive candidate in the race, and the Democratic Party as a whole, the majority of the party, is not as progressive as he is, yet he is in a good position right now to potentially get the nomination, and that's because there are so many other candidates competing to be the center-left alternative to Sanders.
Maureen Groppi at USA Today on the crowded middle, opening a clear lane for Bernie Sanders. Among the hundreds of Americans who are back in the U.S. after being quarantined for coronavirus on a cruise ship off the coast of Japan are 14 who tested positive but are not showing symptoms. The U.S. initially said no one with the virus would be allowed on the repatriation flights, but during the 40-minute bus ride from the ship to the airport, word arrived that 14 had tested positive. Rather than turn them back, those 14 sat in an isolated section of the plane. Some of them have been sent for monitoring to the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Lincoln, where Dr. Shelley Sweethelm says they're making the patients as comfortable as possible.
They have Wi-Fi, they have TV, they've got a small refrigerator, you know, just a lot of the amenities you would have if you were going to a hotel with a lot of engineering controls.
Meanwhile, the remaining Americans who tested negative must serve out 2 weeks of quarantine in the U.S. after nearly 2 weeks quarantined aboard the cruise ship. The Chinese government, by the way, reports more than 72,000 cases on the mainland, with more than 1,800 deaths. The head of a leading hospital in the city that's the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak has died of the disease. Chinese state television said Liu Zhiming, the director of Wuhan Wuchang Hospital, died earlier today, the seventh health worker to fall victim. The hospital was designed to solely treat virus-infected patients. Reuters says the number of new coronavirus cases in mainland China fell below 2,000 for the first time since January. Dr. Anthony Fauci with the National Institutes of Health here in the U.S.
Until I see a consistent trend day after day after day, I wouldn't jump to any positive conclusions. I hope they're right, but I'm not absolutely convinced. So let's just wait and see what happens.
Chinese authorities say measures they've taken to halt the spread are having an effect. However, China's lockdown of cities may have limited the outbreak outside the epicenter, but at great cost to the economy and global business. More than two dozen trade fairs and industry conferences have been postponed, potentially disrupting deals worth billions of dollars. The Boy Scouts has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy as the organization manages scores of lawsuits over allegations of child sexual abuse stretching back decades. The bankruptcy is not expected to affect the organization's programs. The group, though, is already struggling with declining membership. We get more now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The bankruptcy will allow the Boy Scouts to bring all of the lawsuits into one court and try to negotiate a settlement, rather than using the organization's funds to fight each case in court, which might leave some victims with nothing. The organization has been overwhelmed by hundreds of claims after several states got rid of legal hurdles that prevented people from suing over old allegations. A similar bankruptcy strategy to resolve sex abuse lawsuits has been used by more than 20 Catholic dioceses and USA Gymnastics. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The Boy Scouts, based in Irving, Texas, has said that it sincerely apologizes to anyone harmed and encourages victims to come forward. By the way, its recent annual report says membership in the Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts fell 13% at the end of 2018 from the end of 2012. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Attention, everyone. Dell's President's Day sale is still on. Get monumental savings on Dell business PCs with Intel Core processors and business tech. Deals are live now. Our small business technology advisors can help you find the right tech for your business at President's Day prices by calling 877-BUY-DELL. Plus, get free shipping on everything. Just call 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
I'm not a big talker. I am a big doer. But sometimes the only way to solve the problem is to get on the horn and figure it out. So the only people I like talking to? Grainger. With knowledgeable product experts, ready with the answers to my toughest questions, calling Grainger is the one conversation I don't mind having. From machining and motor parts to valves and vacuum pumps, when it comes to solving my problems, Grainger's got my back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire's Democrat primary with just over one quarter of the vote. He has fewer delegates than Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. So why are many center-left Democrats worried that the self-described Democratic Socialist is the favorite to win the nomination? Mr. Sanders may have addressed that question during an appearance yesterday in Richmond, California.
Mr. Bloomberg, like anybody else, has a right to run for president. He does not have a right to buy the presidency.
Maureen Grappi, Washington correspondent at USA Today, has been researching the answers. Maureen, what are you hearing?
It's interesting in that Bernie Sanders is by far the most progressive candidate in the race, and the Democratic Party as a whole, the majority of the party, is not as progressive as he is, yet he is in a good position right now to potentially get the nomination, and that's because there are so many other candidates competing to be the center-left alternative to Sanders, and they are dividing up the rest of the vote, and he is in this position to be winning states, as he did in New Hampshire, with only about a quarter of the vote, but that's more than, even though that's less than the combination of the other candidates, because they're dividing up that vote, he ends up the winner.
All right, so that center lane currently is perceived to be Senator Amy Klobuchar, right? Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden, of course, and then Mike Bloomberg, who's skipping the first four states.
Right, and so we don't know, what will happen for the next few states, but the concern among those who worry about Sanders' nomination is that if all those candidates that you mentioned are in the race through Super Tuesday, that Super Tuesday, when about a third of the delegates are awarded, Sanders could emerge from that with enough of a lead that he would be very hard to stop. And there's the Democrats and Republicans award their delegates differently. The Republicans have a lot of winner-take-all states, so if you win a state with just 25% of the vote, you get all the delegates. Democrats don't do that. They award delegates proportionally. Under the Republican system, it makes it easier for a candidate to amass a lead early. It's harder to do that under the Democratic system, but under the Democratic system, once you do have a lead, it's harder for others to catch up. So the concern from those who would rather have a different nominee is that with all the delegates at stake on Super Tuesday, if Sanders ends up with a lead among them because there are too many other candidates dividing up the rest of them, then he could become unstoppable for the nomination.
Well, we're speaking with Maureen Grappi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Her piece is called Why Some Democrats Are Worried Bernie Sanders Could Be Unstoppable for the 2020 Nomination. I think there was an observer in your story who said that Bernie Sanders is the second choice of Biden supporters?
Yeah, that came from Matt Grossman, who's the director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University. And what he was commenting on after New Hampshire is that Biden, at the beginning of the year, before the voting started, Biden had this coalition that looked like it would be a very strong coalition to go up against Sanders because he was by far the favorite of African-American voters. He also had strong support from older voters and white moderates, but his poor showing in Iowa and New Hampshire has broken up that coalition, and Professor Grissom was saying it's not clear whether anyone at this point can reconstitute that potential strong coalition against Sanders. Biden has so far has said he is going to stay in through South Carolina. South Carolina has about 60% of the Democratic vote there. It's African American, and he's counting on a strong showing there to show that he can still do this. But if he can't, or if he does that enough to stay in the race somewhat, that again raises concern that there will be too many candidates in the race, still in the race, too many center-left candidates in the race in the more moderate lane as we go into Super Tuesday.
Thanks, Maureen. Maureen Groppi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
China reported 1,886 new cases and 98 more deaths in its update today on the coronavirus. Officials say they may postpone China's biggest political meeting of the year to avoid having people travel to Beijing while the virus is still spreading.
Number two.
Shares fell in Asia and Europe as the impact from the virus deepens, with Apple saying it will fail to meet its profit target. Apple says all of its iPhone manufacturing facilities are outside the epicenter of the outbreak and all have been reopened, but production is ramping up slowly.
Number three.
The Boy Scouts of America has filed for bankruptcy protection as the organization faces a barrage of new sex abuse lawsuits. The filing is an attempt to work out a potentially mammoth compensation plan for abuse victims that will allow the 110-year-old organization to carry on. It could be one of the biggest, most complex bankruptcies ever seen. Elsewhere, Denny Hamlin won his third Daytona 500, but that was an immediate afterthought after fellow driver Ryan Newman was hospitalized in serious condition after a terrifying crash during the final lap. It took nearly 2 hours for NASCAR to make an announcement about Newman. Chief Racing Development Officer Steve O'Donnell.
He's in serious condition, but doctors have indicated his injuries are non-life-threatening. We appreciate your thoughts and prayers and ask that you respect the privacy of Ryan and his family during this time.
Officials did not disclose the exact nature of Newman's injuries. Authorities in South Carolina say they will soon release how a 6-year-old girl who disappeared from her front yard was killed, along with details on the death of a neighbor whose body was found moments after the child. Case officers and the Lexington County Coroner's Office plan a news conference later today. Investigators have said they found a clue to Faye Swetlick's disappearance in the neighbor's trash. A Virginia Senate committee has voted to delay a bill banning the sale of assault-style weapons. The proposal cleared the House of Delegates last week, but faced a more challenging path in the Senate. The committee voted to push the bill off to next year. And more signs of pain in the retail sector. Home furnishings giant Pier 1 Imports has filed for bankruptcy. A victim of changing consumer tastes, the chain plans to sell the company less than 2 months after saying it would close up to 450 stores and cut costs to slow its cash burn.
Had some Pier 1 stuff back in the day.
It's been around for a while.
Not recent days, however.
Yeah, maybe it's been struggling.
Maybe that's an indication. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A recent survey found that 26% of small businesses say finding qualified talent is their biggest problem right now. That's a 46-year high. So what's a small business to do when they need a body? We're joined now by hiring consultant Jackie Ducci, founder and CEO of Ducci & Associates. Jackie, how difficult is it for the little guys?
It's so hard. I mean, regardless of industry right now, everyone is struggling to find that solid talent. Because the problem is the good people are being tugged at from all sides. So it's hard enough to find them. And then when you do find them, they're getting counteroffers from their current employers. And it's just harder than ever right now to actually attract good people and secure them.
Let me ask you this. For the small businesses that are trying to find a body, are they running into that they can't compete with larger companies in their field, or are they finding people who don't have the skills?
It's really both. I think, you know, the less brand recognition you have, the harder you have to fight sometimes to attract people. But I see a lot of small businesses offering really attractive packages and things like that. So they're sort of having to adapt and do what they need to do.
How many times has perks and pay come up, I guess, that becomes a stumbling block when, say, a small business can't compete?
Yeah, it's common. I mean, these candidates, again, because they're in demand and they know that, they're able to be very selective, yeah. And they're not willing to make a move unless they know that the next jump is going to get them somewhere, either an advance in title or pay or perks, something. So there's got to be something attractive about the new opportunity for them to move.
All right, so how do you guide some of these folks? What do you tell them when they're desperate for a body?
Well, you know, I think that there's only so much you can do, but I do see certain mistakes all the time that are more costly now than ever before. Things like, for example, dragging their feet when they're going through a hiring process. So a really good candidate is the first one through the door, and they get really excited about them, but then they say, well, you know, we can't possibly make the offer to the first person. We have to, you know, keep looking. And then by the time they go through the process and realize candidate A was the best one, you know, they've lost them to someone else. So things like that, where you just have to be really on the ball and not losing people unnecessarily right now.
You mentioned, too, in some of your notes here, don't fixate on the perfect resume. Explain that.
Yeah, so something I see a lot right now is that because it is so hard to find people who have the right background that you're looking for, when someone does come along where that resume is just phenomenal, the hiring manager will get so excited that then they forget to kind of evaluate that person in three dimensions. So, yeah, the resume is wonderful, but they might not be a good culture fit or something else might be off, and they just rush by that and then wind up making a bad decision because they didn't look at the person in 3D. So yeah. Something to keep in mind.
Thanks, Jackie. Jackie Ducci, hiring consultant and founder and CEO of Ducci & Associates. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Your credit card probably gives you 1% cash back, but what does your bank account give you? Most banks give you 0.1% APY interest on your savings, but you should be earning more. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, you earn more interest on your money. They have one of the highest interest rates in the market at 1.78% annual percentage yield. That's 18 times more interest than the national average of 0.1%, according to Bankrate.com. And it's so fast and easy to get started. It only takes a dollar and a few minutes to open an account. You can even do it right from your phone. No paperwork required. Plus, there are no fees, and your money is FDIC insured up to $1 million through their partner banks. Right now, you can sign up for the Wealthfront Cash Account in less than 5 minutes by visiting wealthfront.com/Gordon. Go to wealthfront.com/Gordon and start earning 18 times more interest on all your savings. That's wealthfront.com/Gordon. Wealthfront is not a bank. Cash Account is offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront conveys funds to partner banks who accept and maintain deposits, provide the interest rate, and provide FDIC insurance. The APY is subject to change.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, February 18. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. 14 Americans evacuated from an overseas cruise ship are being treated for coronavirus in the U.S. Boy Scouts file for bankruptcy protection over sex abuse lawsuits. 1,000 homes feared affected by Mississippi flooding. Bloomberg qualifies for tomorrow's debate stage in Las Vegas. HSBC, Europe's biggest bank, announced today that it's cutting 35,000 jobs. Apple warns coronavirus is hurting revenue. Denny Hamlin won the Daytona 500, but concerns are with driver Ryan Newman, survivor of a terrifying wreck. But more than a year after Florida voters approved a constitutional amendment restoring voting rights to an estimated 1.4 million people with felony convictions, widespread confusion surrounds its implementation. A law aimed at carrying out the amendment has sparked legal battles that remain unresolved. The state has provided little guidance to local elections officials, and Wall Street Journal reporter Ariane Campo Flores says some counties are filling the void with inconsistent remedies. Ariane, sounds complicated.
Yeah, it's a really muddled, confusing picture in Florida with this issue. So at the heart of this is a 2018 amendment that was approved by nearly 65% of voters in Florida. And what it did was reverse the state's disenfranchisement of felons, which was among the strictest in the nation, and restored voting rights to an estimated 1.4 million people with felony convictions, by far the largest group of disenfranchised felons of any state in the U.S. And that measure was historic. It was one of the largest reenfranchisements of a population in decades. And, you know, it was hailed by people who had been fighting to implement it and get it passed for years. Ever since then, it has become steadily more confusing in terms of its implementation, because what happened, for starters, is that the legislature in Florida, led by Republicans as well as the Republican governor, who had been opposed to this amendment, said that the amendment needed to have a law passed to implement it and to clarify some of its language and some of its provisions. And in that law that the legislature passed, which was last year, it added a condition that said that in order for felons to have completed all terms of their sentence, they needed to pay off any fines, fees, or restitution. And as it turns out, the vast majority of people released, felons released from prison, owe something in that category, some sort of financial obligation. Yeah. There, by some estimates, it's as much as 80%.
All right. So obviously, you've been behind bars. You haven't earned any money. Or there probably is no money to pay off fines, restitution, like you said, whatever they owe. So so now what? These guys, I guess, don't fully understand where they are in terms of eligibility to vote?
Right. So there's several issues now that this is that this has sparked. On the one hand, there is no easy way for felons to find out if they owe any fees, fines, or restitution, or how much they owe, if they do owe any. There is no central repository for such information. They can go to their local clerks of court and try to dig up that information, and in some cases it will be available. In other times it may be a decades-old case that is very hard to retrieve records for. The records may not exist, or they may be stuck in storage in a warehouse somewhere. So that's one problem. The other problem is that there's just legal confusion now over the validity of this law, because that law that was passed by the legislature was challenged by a number of civil rights groups. There's ongoing litigation on that, but in a preliminary injunction that was granted by a lower court federal judge, he found that you cannot deny someone the right to vote only because they can't afford to pay off a financial obligation. Mm. So that sort of gets at the very heart of what that law does.
Yeah.
That's been challenged by the state, and so this is all under appeal, and there's really no conceivable way it's going to get resolved for months and perhaps even years.
Jeez. We're speaking with Arian Campo-Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Florida Voted to Give 1.4 Million Felons the Right to Vote. It hasn't gone smoothly. So this is not going to be settled for whenever the Florida primary is or the November election, I guess?
Well, almost certainly not before the Florida primary. So that's happening on March 17th. The deadline to register is February 18th, which is days away. So it's hard to see how there's going to be any clarity before that. We'll have to see. I mean, the appellate court should rule on that preliminary injunction probably within weeks. There is also a trial scheduled to begin in April on the substance of that law that was passed last year. And, you know, you can imagine that even if that were to move quickly, almost certainly, whatever the result is, the losing party is probably going to appeal, yeah. And then that's going to, I mean, this could conceivably go up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Thanks, Arian. Arian Campo-Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Every night, local police receive hundreds of calls from burglar alarms. The vast majority of the time, they have no idea whether the alarm is real. Is there really a crime going on or not? All the alarm company could tell them is that the motion sensor went off. SimpliSafe Home Security is different. If there's a break-in, SimpliSafe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster. You get comprehensive protection, too. Outdoor cameras alert you to anyone approaching from outside. Entry, motion, and glass break sensors guard the inside. I recently installed SimpliSafe. The easy-to-follow instructions made the process lightning fast, and you can certainly sleep better knowing that SimpliSafe is monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. Visit simplysafe.com/GordonDeal. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You got nothing to lose. Go now and visit simplysafe.com/GordonDeal so they know our show sent you. That's simplysafe.com/GordonDeal.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know some people are closer with their families than others, but your honeymoon is one place where typically you expect that you'll get to spend one-on-one time with your new spouse. Not the case for one bride, unfortunately, who posted her honeymoon horror story on Reddit, in which she says her in-laws gifted to newlyweds a one-week all-inclusive hotel for their honeymoon. While initially really grateful for the wedding present, the couple quickly grew frustrated when they arrived and discovered that the parents had also booked a room at the same hotel for themselves for the whole week. And they want to do group things.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, she says her new in-laws woke them up every morning at 6 a.m. and made them go to three meals a day with them, forcing the pair to pretend to get sick just to avoid attending a meal. The couple got so fed up that they left, using the money they had saved to book a new hotel and salvage what remained of their honeymoon somewhere far away from family.
Wow. Do you think this story, by the way, gets to the in-laws?
What do you mean? Oh, did they find out about it?
Yeah, they find out? Because I know it's like anonymous, right?
I mean, they did complain to them, apparently, and they said, like, look, you know, it's our honeymoon. We've got to spend some time alone. Yeah. And I guess the parents basically said, you know, that's what your time inside the room is for. But when you're outside the room, then, you're fair game. And, of course, not only are we're gonna drag you outside the room at, you know, 6 a.m. every morning to go to breakfast. So,
holy cow.
So, yeah. So you get, you know, 2 hours by yourselves in the room, and then the rest of that time is for us because we paid, I guess, for the hotel.
Wow. We paid for the tickets. Therefore, we get a say in what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I would probably flee myself.
Where's the husband?
Yeah.
Telling his parents to back off.
Yeah, I guess he did agree to leave, though. So that's something. Finally, he had to say, look, we got to get out of here.
Goodness, man. Talk about meddling.
Yeah.
Shapers.
And, of course, everybody on Reddit very much agreed with her and said that she was definitely in the right for doing this.
Agreed. She has my support as well.
And if we were choking Gordon and got to pick someone to perform CPR on us, few of us would likely pick the guy at the bar who's had a few beers. An Australian lizard was fortunate, however, that one bar patron stepped in to save its life after to apparently drown in this guy's beer. The customer named Brett said he initially thought the staff at the Anne Boleyn in New South Wales was playing a prank on him when he spotted a gecko in his mug of beer. Brett said he sprung into action when workers assured him that they had nothing to do with the lizard, and he scooped it right out of the beverage. The gecko wasn't moving, so Brett started performing chest compressions and mouth-to-mouth on the lizard while a friend filmed video of his rescue attempt. After several attempts, the gecko springs back to life and looks none the worse for wear, which we can only assume was cause for another celebratory beer or two from Brett and his buddies.
Man.
So he actually picks it up and he puts it right to his mouth and starts blowing into the gecko's mouth, you know, tiny little lizard like 2 inches long.
Yeah.
And it just pops back up and, you know, starts running around again.
Wow. You got to be careful, I guess, with the amount of air you're blowing, right? Because he's tiny.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah. This is Australia, where just wildlife can be found anywhere. It was probably the third gecko found in a beer that morning, I'm guessing.
Well, that is one of the most Australian things ever
to
have happened in a bar. Said a man revives a gecko who's drowning in his beer.
Yeah, and just kept on drinking after that.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. America's First News.
Attention, everyone. Dell's President's Day sale is still on. Get monumental savings on Dell business PCs with Intel Core processors and business tech. Deals are live now. Our small business technology advisors can help you find the right tech for your business at President's Day prices by calling 877-BUY-DELL. Plus, get free shipping on everything. Just call 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
Glad you could spend some time with us. Concerns are mounting about how long the coronavirus may survive on surfaces, so much so that China's central bank has taken measures to deep clean and destroy its cash, which of course changes hands multiple times a day and can be dirty. It's unknown exactly how long coronavirus can linger on contaminated surfaces and objects with the potential of infecting people. But CNN says some researchers are finding clues by studying the elusive behaviors of other coronaviruses. Human coronaviruses, such as SARS and MERS, have been found to persist on inanimate surfaces, including metal, glass, or plastic surfaces, for as long as 9 days
if that surface had not been disinfected. That's according to the Journal of Hospital Infection. Cleaning with common household products can make a difference, according to the research. Surface disinfection procedures with hydrogen peroxide or bleach can work within 1 minute. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The head of a leading hospital in China's central city of Wuhan, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak, has died of the disease. As Apple warned its iPhone sales would suffer because of the epidemic, casting a chill on global stock markets.
Number two.
The Boy Scouts of America has filed for bankruptcy protection, facing mounting legal costs from defending itself against lawsuits alleging sexual abuse of boys. The nonprofit sought Chapter 11 protection in a court filing early today.
Number three.
The National Association of Federal Judges has called an emergency meeting today to address growing concerns about the intervention of Justice Department officials and President Trump in politically sensitive cases. The Independent Federal Judges Association says it could not wait until its spring conference to weigh in on a deepening crisis that has enveloped the Justice Department and Attorney General William Barr. Elsewhere, the swollen Pearl River appears to have crested in Mississippi's capital of Jackson at just under 37 feet, but Governor Tate Reeves warns the hundreds of evacuees not to rush back home until they get the all clear.
It's hard for people to heed the call, but folks in central Mississippi have done just that, and because of that, it has mitigated and minimized the number of search and rescue teams that we've had to put in harm's way.
No injuries have been reported from the major flooding in central Mississippi and southern Tennessee, but as the high waters recede, officials expect to find damaged roads and problems with water and sewage lines. And here's some unfortunate news. The iconic Plymouth Rock and other sites were covered in red graffiti during a vandalism spree discovered at the site marking the landing of the Pilgrims in Massachusetts 400 years ago. Officials in Plymouth discovered the vandalism early yesterday morning. Workers had removed the red spray paint from the rock before noon. Police say the vandals also targeted a sign celebrating the upcoming 400th anniversary of the 1620 Mayflower Landing, the Pilgrim Maiden statue, and the National Monument to the Forefathers. No arrests have been made.
Come on, man. Seriously?
Boo.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A Georgia man is being praised for his good timing after he was caught on video using his grocery cart to help police nab a shoplifting suspect in a Walmart parking lot. The quick-thinking Good Samaritan appeared to time the exact moment the suspect would run past his cart before pushing it in front of his path in a video released by the Peachtree City Police Department. The video shows the cart knocking the suspect to the ground, allowing officers to catch up and apprehend the suspect as he tried to scramble to his feet. One officer pats the unnamed do-gooder on the shoulder as others help pick up items that fell from his cart. The incident happened last month at a Home Depot in Peachtree City, located about 30 miles south of Atlanta. Fox 5 Atlanta says the suspect had taken items from the store and ran into the neighboring Walmart parking lot. He was charged with felony shoplifting and obstruction. And while police were appreciative of the helping hand, they did advise potential do-gooders to think of their own safety before stepping in to a police situation. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.